Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams alongside.
I'm not Sherry Coolidge.
Who are you?
I am Burl Love. I'm wearing some nice shoes today, but other than that, I don't really have much in common with Sherry, who's got the best shoe game in town.
Yes, she does. Our executive editor, our fearless leader here at Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer. Glad to have you with us, Burl. And Silent Phil, as always, on the ones and twos, wearing his Brink stocking hat today. Do we call it stocking hat or toboggan? Toboggan, okay.
You know, the kids are calling them beanies.
Beanies, yes. We had this discussion in my house recently with some of my buddies.
My son thinks I'm an idiot. I said, hey, do you want to wear a stocking cap today? And he's like, what's a stocking cap? And I was like, this? And I held one up and he's like, that's a beanie. I'm like, no, a beanie is a little thing that's a propeller on top,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like the little pom-pom thing, right?
Yeah, but no, man, I'm getting more irrelevant to the youth of America as we speak. I mean, just sitting here, I've lost a few degrees of relevancy, I'm sure.
I stopped trying years ago, bro.
Oh, my gosh.
About 9 years ago, my kid was born. First kid. Anyway.
Anyway, he's wearing a beanie. Let's try to, you know, keep up.
William is wearing a beanie. I'll remember that. Noted. Our special guest today. Really excited about her. And I'm really excited about all of our guests. But Dean Gregory, a partner at Montgomery Inn, the Gregory family. They are the Montgomery Inn, and you know
the man at the boathouse. You know the family divides up, kind of the
yeah.
They've got, you know, Tom is at the original site, and you know they have a brother-in-law Evan who handles, you know, the grocery items and the mail order stuff. But if you go to the boathouse, you're going to see Dean Gregory, and he popped over here today to talk to us.
Let's ask him, see if maybe he'll hand out $100 bills going around.
Maybe he will.
Or maybe not.
I don't know. But for those who don't know, the Montgomery Inn is celebrating their 70th anniversary this month. So
it's awesome.
Yeah.
What a
so
great
we'll talk
place.
To Dean. He's always full of stories. That's for sure.
Yeah. Looking forward to having him here momentarily.
But we want to talk real quick.
Yeah.
You're fired up about redistricting. I think the headline on your column was that the state Republicans are not listening to Ohioans.
No, they're not.
When it comes to drawing the congressional map.
They're not. And as I sat here right before we started recording, our state house reporter, Jesse Balmert in Columbus, is reporting that they've really made no real huge changes to their map that they're going to officially vote on tomorrow, Wednesday, as we record on Tuesday. Which will favor a 13-2 map as Ohio will lose a congressional seat because of census.
Yep. Right.
And the Republicans are going – look, you know, Burl, I am fired up, and I'm fired up because of the fairness issue. The voters of Ohio in 2018 said overwhelmingly that we want fair districts. And that was if folks recall, there was a – there were a lot of Republicans and a lot of Democrats who came out in that primary because there were gubernatorial primaries for both parties. And so this wasn't just like, a Democratic leaning primary or Republican lean. This was all voters that came out in that. And so they overwhelmingly 75% said, we want fair districts. They changed the Constitution of Ohio, and the legislature has turned around and really acted like this didn't even happen.
So for those who haven't been following it, or for those who want to understand this, if you could just take a minute to explain, you know, I'll set it up for you. So, you know, the accusation is that, like in many states, the party that's in power controls the map. And through a process we know as gerrymandering, rather than dividing the state up into groups of counties following the county borders into a congressional district map that looks reasonable, the gerrymandering process describes drawing the boundaries in such a way that registered voters that favor your candidate are in a district, pretty much making it a lock. So regardless of who's running, these districts will vote one way or the other. And the gerrymandered Ohio map, because the Republican Party has the majority in the state house, they had the opportunity after the census, not the opportunity, they were required by law to redraw these districts. And rather than use the opportunity to address the gerrymandering situation once and for all, we pretty much got the same old, same old. Is that right? Did I explain that right?
You nailed it. Absolutely.
And so what do you think will happen? The governor, Mike DeWine, has to sign this. Do you think he'll sign it?
Whew, that's a really good question. I'm inclined to think that he will sign it and they'll essentially punt it to the Supreme Court. It's inevitable. There will be a lawsuit, citizen lawsuit, to say, hey, this is not fair. And then, you know, you can look at this and say, politically, Republican leaders are just essentially saying, we're just going to punt it. In these hyper-partisan times, we'll punt it over to the courts and see what they say. So I'm inclined to say
So are you saying that because their constituents are expecting them to preserve the map? And so rather than run the risk of getting a primary challenge, making their reelection bid more difficult than they want to, they are going to pretty much pass it along to the court so that the court, you know, this will end up in court probably, and they'll just blame it on the court and say, well, I tried to do what you wanted, but the court ultimately decided, and they have the final say, correct?
They can kick it back. The court cannot make the decision to draw the lines themselves. They do have the power to kick it back to the legislature to say, essentially, for our layman's terms, do better.
Right.
Redraw these folks.
I think your column spoke to a lot of people who are frustrated with this. And it's not, even though it's a very partisan issue, I think that there is bipartisan consensus that our maps do need to be fair.
Yeah.
You know, because at some point, you know, the Republican Party could be on the wrong end of this.
Right.
You know, already you have, you know, Ohio shifting to the blue in the more, you know, metropolitan areas. So, you know, if you're playing the long game, you would probably want to err on the side of having them be fair so that it's at least a race, because what you run the risk of is if there is a shift in power the next time this comes up in 4 years, who's to stop a Democratic-led state legislature to draw them in the other way? So it's,
well, that's right. And
it goes both ways.
That's right. But that's an argument, though, that I have gotten from some Republicans saying, well, the other guys would do it the same way. Well, guess what? They're not the ones in control here, and they're not the ones in charge. And whatever, you can come up with all these hypotheticals, but I go back to that 2018 what the voters said and changed the Constitution in 2018 to demand fair districts, and we just haven't gotten that result here. So
there you have it.
Yeah, it's going to continue to play out. But
all right. Well, you know, that's a heavy topic, Jason.
It is. You can get down rabbit holes really quickly.
Right.
On it.
Let's talk about ribs.
All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and very pleased to welcome to the podcast for the first time in studio, and it's great to have a guest in studio. It's great to have our guest, Montgomery & Partner, Dean Gregory. Mr. Gregory, how you doing?
Hey, Jason, I'm great. Thank you for having me today. I'll enjoy being here, I'm sure.
Burl is locked and loaded for the first question for you. I hope you're ready. Because he's ready.
I'm ready. Fire.
We're going to ease into this. So, you know, we would have you on the podcast anytime you want to come here. But there's a big, what we call a news peg in our business. You know, why Dean Gregory now? It's because the Montgomery Inn, can you believe it, is celebrating its 70th anniversary. Can you believe that?
Isn't that incredible?
That's incredible.
I never would have believed it growing up in the business or whatever. It's just I can't think of too many other restaurants that have been around as long as we have.
Well, for the listeners we have that aren't familiar with the legend of Montgomery Inn, I'm going to kind of explain how most people think about it, and you can kind of fill in the gaps and tell us what really happened. So okay. The legend is you have a Greek guy named Ted Gregory, you know, just your average restaurant owner, opens up a little dive on Montgomery Road, and then all of a sudden Bob Hope, the, you know, the legendary comedian, actor, entertainer. Ohio guy. Bob Hope decides that these are good ribs, and then boom, it blows up. The rest is history, and 70 years later, you're like part of the fabric and icon of the city. But there's probably more to it than that.
There's a lot more to it. It did happen that way, but it took a lot longer than that sounded. My folks bought the Montgomery Inn in 1951. It was called McCabe's Inn.
In the location that it's in
right
location, now.
Mm-hmm. Same location. Montgomery was a very small town then, but Montgomery Road was being built to all the way to Columbus, Ohio. And there was a lot of building going on in Montgomery, a lot of new homes, you know, being built. So my grandfather, my mother's father, who was in the restaurant business in Kennedy Heights, and I should back up, my parents lived in Detroit after they got married with my father's family. My mother was really homesick, and her dad did everything he could to get him back home. So he found McCabe's Inn, asked him to come down and look at it, and they decided to buy it. So it was a little bar, and it had a dining room that probably had about 30 seats. My dad had two pinball tables in there. He had the old pinball machines, the bingo machines that weren't supposed to pay off, you know, that you could actually gamble on those.
No.
And jukebox, whatever, all, you know, whatever. And my dad wanted nothing to do with the food end of the business, so he leased the kitchen out to the lady that ran it before, who took over. And my dad would never eat her food. He said her kitchen was filthy, her food was terrible. So my mother would cook dinner and bring it to him at the restaurant every night, and she'd always make enough for a couple of the guys, you know, hanging around the bar. Well, one of the few weekend nights that they ever took off, they went to a jazz club downtown, and they had ribs for the first time. They fell in love with them, and they're driving home, and my father said to my mother, "Can you make ribs like that?" She goes, "I don't know, but I'll try." So she started working on, you know, the ribs, the seasoning, her barbecue sauce. And my dad had a pretty good palate. I mean, he really knew, you know, good food. So she would cook ribs. My father would critique them, and she would bring, you know, more and more for the guys hanging around. Next thing you know, they're asking for ribs all the time. So we had rib night on Wednesday night, and it was rib night on Saturday. My mother kicked a lady out of the kitchen, and she took over, and that's when we got into the rib business. They opened in 51. This is probably mid-50s, whichever. So early 60s is when Bob Hope discovered us. Bob was in town doing a and I believe it was early. I'm sure it's like 63, 64 or something like that. Bob was doing a benefit for the Bob Hope House here in Cincinnati. They started with Judge Benjamin Schwartz, from the juvenile court judge. Anyway, Harry Adler, who was a good friend of my father's, and Harry was the chairman of the Hope House, took Bob out to Montgomery for dinner. And my dad and Bob hit it off. My grandfather, my dad's father, had a little greasy spoon in Detroit and the vaudeville area. And my father also was the valet for the Greek middleweight champion of the world, Anton Christofridis. And I believe this is right around 1940, 41 maybe. And Bob was a boxer before he got into vaudeville and, you know, in the movie acting. So they started talking about the old acts, whatever, the old vaudeville acts. And then they started talking about boxing. And my dad said Bob's eyes just lit up. He loved boxing, whatever. That was his first love. So they got to be really great friends. We would ship ribs to Bob in California. And when Mr. Hope had his Bob Hope Desert Classic, which was a four-day pro-am golf tournament in Palm Springs, and it was like who's who in golf, who's who in the White House, who's who in Hollywood would be there. We'd catered a party at his home for 25 years for about 500 people. So when we started to market our barbecue sauce, Bob did a television, actually two television ads for us. And the price was we had to give a dime from every bottle that we sold to the Hope House here in Cincinnati. And we thought that was kind of high. And then we realized that Bob had just done a TV commercial for the California market only for Lazy Boy chairs, and he charged them $750,000. So we felt pretty fortunate to spend a dime a bottle.
So there's a lot you said there. So the first thing I want to kind of touch on is that while your dad, Ted, and it's been 20 years since he passed. Is that
correct?
Right?
Yeah, 2001.
2001.
Yeah.
While he's the ribs king, he's the, you know, the cartoon logo on the door. We have actually in studio the Ted Gregory plush doll here. While he was the front of the house guy, calling him the ribs king is kind of disingenuous because it was your mom, Matula, who's still with us.
Absolutely.
Who created the recipe.
They were a great team. My mother was really shy. My dad was a great promoter.
On the level of like Don King promotion level.
My dad would leave every day at lunchtime because our restaurant was in good hands. He would go to other places around town and buy drinks. And I'm sure he always had a couple his own self, whatever. But he would hand out gift cards, invite people out for dinner, whatever. And he's the one that really, you know, my mother took care of the back end. My mother and my mother's sister, my Aunt Tasha, ran that kitchen with an iron fist, whatever. But my dad did a hell of a job, you know, getting people to come in, whatever. So they were great partners together.
And it's still a family affair, right?
Oh, yeah. My brother Tom runs a Montgomery location. My brother-in-law Evan runs our Cincy Favorites and handles all of our retail sales. Vicky and Terry both help out at both restaurants. And my son Tag has kind of taken over at the Boathouse. So still
That's
family.
Great. Yeah.
And your mom, does she?
Mom's still living.
Is she able to make it into?
She doesn't get down very often. She's in a nursing home right now.
Yeah.
But she worries about Montgomery Inn every day, calls, wants to know if we're busy.
Really?
You didn't burn a barbecue sauce, did you? I think somebody years ago burned. We cook our barbecue sauce in a 50-gallon drum in the kitchen. And, you know, because we use it all day long, we replenish. And somebody turned that thing up to boiling, and nobody paid attention. This was probably 30 years ago. My mother has never forgotten that. She always asked, "You didn't burn the sauce today, did you?" Whatever. So,
and that's her. That's her recipe.
Oh yes, absolutely. Now the girls in our family know the recipe. None of the boys do. My mother always thought that my dad would. Somebody would say, "Can we have the recipe?" He'd say, "Sure," and give it away. So, back in the old days when my mother made it from scratch. She would buy – we had an old house behind the end of Montgomery, and we called that the spice house. She would buy spices and put them in bags for our staff to mix with the wet ingredients. But she would actually buy spices that we didn't use and throw them away just so nobody could figure out what was in the barbecue sauce. Now, I kind of forgot where I was going with that.
Sisters have the recipe.
But, oh, yeah, my sisters have the recipe.
So and you have two sisters.
We always joke. Vicky, that's how the girls, yeah, Vicky and Terry.
And Terry.
And that's why the boys have to work so hard.
And they are the only two, besides your mom,
correct.
The only three on the planet that have this recipe.
There's a company that Kroger's owns. They call it the Red Sauce Plant here in Lower Price Hill. And they do regional packing for red sauces. Your tomato sauces, your spaghetti sauces. Those are all done regionally. And since we really started to market our products back in 91, 92, we just couldn't keep up with the demand, and we have our sauce made there, whatever. So we have an ironclad agreement over there, a non-disclosure. If that ever gets out, we'd never have to work again, whichever. So,
so is it Vicky and Terry then that come Vicky in every morning to the Boathouse? And
well, they used to mix the spices together. And then we would bring them to the Boathouse in Montgomery, and then we would mix that with the big ingredients, whatever. But it's like Colonel Sanders. We have our secret spices in there too.
Well, in Cincinnati food lore, I mean, you've got the secret recipe to Skyline Chili. You've got the secret recipe to like Buddy LaRose's spaghetti and pizza sauce. And then you got the barbecue sauce from the Montgomery Inn.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's pretty amazing. The ribs, like Skyline Chili. You either get it or you don't. Sometimes they can be polarizing, especially if someone for the first time is expecting like St. Louis smoker style barbecue ribs. But the ribs you know serve are pretty unique. And without getting into the like exactly how it's done, tell me a little bit about over the years how those ribs have found their way into what I, you know, the fabric of the Cincinnati culinary
for sure.
scene.
Yeah. When my mother, well, this was back in the 50s, and, you know, now everything that, you know, the ribs that you see, 90% of them are probably, you know, they're smoked, whatever. When my mother started cooking ribs, nobody even knew what smoke was around here. She slow roasted them, and, you know, that's all we served for years and years. And then, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago when all these other – nobody served ribs for a long, long time. When all these rib restaurants started popping up, you know, everybody was smoke, whatever. And our customers always liked what we had. But, you know, this was about maybe 5 or 6 years ago. The young people, my youngest son particularly, would go to another rib restaurant here in town all the time because he liked theirs better because they were smoked. So we actually put a smoker in our commissary. We cook our ribs daily at each location. But we didn't have room for a smoker at either one. So we converted one of our huge walk-in ovens at our commissary into a smoker, and we put smoked St. Louis ribs on our menu. We couldn't give them away. When our customers come, you know, I mean, they want our product. They want what they grew up with, whatever.
This podcast is called the That's So Cincinnati podcast. That is so Cincinnati.
I'll tell you what,
right
so,
there.
So rewarding. I'll get someone from Texas come in or someone from South Carolina, you know, and they'll eat, I'll tease them, you're going to have some Yankee ribs tonight. And they'll say, those are the best ribs I've ever had in my life, whatever. So that's
my
what
mouth
it's all
is
about.
Watering as he's talking about it because I've been to a lot of ribs places over the years. And the experience of eating Montgomery Inn ribs, where you literally, it falls off the bone. It's so tender, the flavor's just right. And you literally have a pile of bones left with like nothing else. Like, I mean, you know, it's not like you're gnawing to get it off. It is just this like experience that I think once people have it and they're not, you know, if they don't have a preconceived notion of what it should be, which I think is what holds people back. You know, that's hilarious that you can't give away the
we took them off the menu. They just didn't sell. I mean, we threw away more than we served, whatever.
Because when you go to the Montgomery Inn, that's what you want.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
So we were talking about your dad. I'm hoping we can get into a few of the legendary stories that, for people who haven't heard the larger than life stories of Ted Gregory and what he did around town. There are a few I could prompt you with, but I was wondering if you could share a story that gets people laughing when it comes to your dad and how he operated.
Oh, gosh. He had the biggest heart in the world, number one. My dad always did things for local nonprofits, particularly the smaller ones, whatever. There wasn't a lot of administration where what he did went right back to the company, to the charity, whatever. But I walk around the boathouse and I look at pictures of him from something, and I'll just think of some of the crazy stuff that he did. One of my favorites, and because Christmas is coming up soon, this is back, I don't know, probably right after we opened the boathouse in 89, my dad went to a professional photographer with a crown and had his picture taken with the crown on. And he had like the little pictures, it was probably like a 2x3 photo of himself, whatever. He would walk around, and my dad was always notorious for tipping our staff. He used to pass out $100 bills all the time when he thought somebody did a nice job. And my dad would come up to everybody and say, hey, here's a little something for your wallet. And they would hold their hand out, and he'd hand them a picture of himself, and they'd take it and put it in their pocket real quick. And then he would follow them because they'd always go in a corner and pull it out to see if it was a 50 or 100. And they'd take that picture, and he would just sit there and laugh. I still have people that worked for us 30 years ago that come in and tell me about that when they were, you know, young. I got to think of some things, whatever.
Let me prompt you on one just because I'm familiar with this story. And you know, for listeners, Dean and I go way back. You know, we're both part of that, like, larger Greek community in town. A lot of it that centers around, the church, like good Greeks, you know, tend to do. And your dad was always very generous with the church, and all of you are. But when he passed – There was the story I heard, okay, is that he had figured out how he was going to get all of you, you, your brothers, your friends,
correct,
the priest,
yep. Yep.
The priest to his graveside. Can explain kind of what happened there?
My dad's motto was always leave him laughing. So my dad died on December 2nd, 2001. My brother Tom and I, they lived downtown. My folks lived in a condo. He didn't want to be in hospice. He didn't want to be in the hospital. My brother Tom and I would stay with him. We would change shifts every day at 10 o'clock. We'd spend the night with him. He was very weak. He wanted to get up and use the facilities, you know, on his own. He didn't want to. We had a nurse there that would give him his shots and his medication all day. But basically, after 9/11, the news was just, you know, nonstop. We'd sit on his patio with a TV and smoke cigars and watch news all day. And one day we're sitting there, and he starts laughing. He goes, "I got something planned for you guys. You're going to be so proud of me." Well, make a long story short, my father passed, and we're sitting in the church. And, you know, I don't know why it popped in my head. I'll never know what he was talking about making him laugh. And an hour later, I found out we're at the cemetery, and Father Bill and my dad got to be great friends. But we're at the cemetery, and the priest had said his prayers. Ted Strasser, who was one of my dad's drinking buddies, Strasser Funeral Home in Blue Ash, handled the arrangements. And Ted comes up and says Ted had a dying request. He wanted his two boys, Tom and Dean, his son-in-law, Evan, Father Bill, his nephew, John, from Detroit, to all have a cigar graveside and reflect on his life. So he pulls out these $20 cigars that none of us could afford back then. And we're all crying 1 minute. We're lighting up our cigars. Next thing you know, the cigars start blowing up. He had put cigarette loads in all the cigars. And Ted showed us the note. He wrote to the nurse what cigars to buy. It looked like a child had written it. He was so weak. But, he, you know, where to buy the cigarette loads and all that, whatever. So we were crying 1 minute, then we were all laughing. We thought, God, what a great send-off. But, you know, right away I started thinking, what can I do to my kids? You know, something like that, whatever, when my number's up. But it was an absolute classic, I'll tell you what. And
the cigar is really an iconic part of Montgomery. And
definitely,
your dad, as we're looking at the plush doll, is holding a big stogie. It's in the logo, a cigar.
Definitely, yeah.
Was he always a cigar smoker or what?
Love cigars. Okay. My mother and father met. My grandparents were all at a wedding, and it was one of those things, your son should meet my daughter and so-so, whatever. My father came through Cincinnati. He was going to the Indianapolis 500 with one of his buddies to go sell concessions to pick up some extra money for the weekend. So on the way back, my father stopped in Cincinnati to go to the Calamiris home and, you know, meet my mother. And I don't know what happened, but they made plans. You know, he would come back. They went out to dinner. My mom said she's 19 years old. He's 21. They're sitting in this restaurant. They just had dinner, and she goes, he pulls out a cigar that's about 14 inches long and starts smoking it. She goes, I didn't know what to do. I've never seen anybody smoke a cigar. But, yeah, they were always around in our house, whatever, and we grew up hating cigars. We'd be in the car. My dad was like, he'd always stomp on the gas and stomp on the brakes. I had motion sickness. I would hate to get in the car with him. Now, compound that with, you know, it's winter, the windows are up, it's cold, and your dad's smoking a huge cigar in the front seat. I mean, I got sick every time we went somewhere, and we swore we would never smoke cigars, and all the boys in our family smoke them now. We really enjoy it.
You had to inherit that gene.
I would think so for sure. It is hereditary, man.
You have anything, Jason?
Didn't you just have...
We had
an event, right?
Speaking of cigars, so the other news is that the boathouse was closed for a few days,
correct,
or 10 days,
yep,
and is open again. So we're all happy the boathouse is open again. But I was telling Jason before we started to record that I got to witness what I think was a quintessential Dean Gregory moment. You know, calm, grace under pressure. The consummate host, right? He's never going to, like, let anything get in the way of his hosting duties. And so a few weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago now, you are hosting the cigar dinner that you guys typically have, and the beneficiary for this, which you've had lots of beneficiaries over the years. I've been to the one that benefited Buddy LaRosa's youth athletic program and the boxers, and we got to see amateur boxing. This particular night, the beneficiary was American Cancer Society and the Real Men Wear Pink campaign. David Fulcher's there auctioning off Bengals stuff, and one of the fundraisers was a bourbon raffle. And Dean, you got up to draw the ticket and read the number. And as you were reading the number, someone came up to you and whispered in your ear. And without missing a beat, you just went, "Excuse me, I have to go. The restaurant's on fire." And you just went off and that, like, no drama. And sure enough, we were all outside already because the dinner was in a tent outside by the, you know, if you're familiar with the boathouses, there's that big area right by the river there.
The skating rink.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And it just so happened that the fire chief, Michael Washington, was in attendance that night. So he sprang up and went into duty. But I don't want to say you have pull in the city, but I think there had to be every fire engine, every police car up and down Eastern Avenue because no one wanted to see the boathouse burn down.
My staff was amazed by how quickly – the fire department responded, whatever. They said they were here within a minute and a half, whatever.
Well, when the police is there texting everybody, I'm sure that yeah, – yeah. But good news, it was pretty much limited to –
the fire was contained. It was a fire in our – we have a huge exhaust hood over all of our stoves in the kitchen. And something happened. One of our boilers sparked. And there's – that ductwork is clean on a monthly basis. But there's always grease in there. And the grease started on fire from the spark. It burnt the exhaust fan on the roof. And when I walked out from under the tent, I could see flames, you know, coming up, and I was scared to death. I thought the whole place was going to go down, but thank God it was just the flames were coming out of the ductwork and, you know, from the motor or whatever. So it's a huge piece of equipment, not something that you find, you know, normally stock. So we had to have one made, and that was like 10 days, and then it came from Oklahoma, 2 days to ship, and a couple of days to get hooked up. So we were actually closed for 14 days. So we're thrilled to be back.
I think the city's thrilled that you're back.
Yeah.
That Friday night, when the fire started on a Wednesday, we had like three rehearsal dinners on Friday night, and we were so worried about, you know, and we were able to move them all to our Montgomery location. So thank God we didn't mess anybody's wedding plans up and able to relocate most of our reservations elsewhere.
Well, as we're talking, it's bringing back memories of the Montgomery Inn was really the first sit-down restaurant that I really and my family enjoyed in Cincinnati. I grew up in rural Southeast Ohio, and I'm not kidding, but our sit-down restaurant was Bob Evans. That was okay. It. And so my parents, I came to UC, my parents we would come here every summer for Reds games, and we would go to Montgomery, and that would be like a big treat this isn't Bob Evans. Mm-hmm. and then my parents would come in and visit the UC, always the boathouse. And it's withstood the test of time, like your restaurant. And it is always one of those places that you can wear a tuxedo or you can wear, you know, jeans and a golf shirt.
Always comfortable there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's one thing I really love about the place. And one other thing I've come to really enjoy, and I don't get the ribs that much anymore, but I get the Mel Fisher salad. I'll go there for lunch, for a work lunch or something.
Yeah.
And you were telling us before Mel we started recording that was actually a guy.
Mel Fisher was one of the most incredible men you ever met in your entire life. Had Texo Chemical here in Cincinnati. But Mel would have lunch or dinner at one of the Montgomery Inns every night.
Every night?
Every day or every night, yeah. He was like part of our family. His whole family was. He raised four great sons. Michael just retired as the CEO of Children's Hospital. But those guys they were like family to us, still are. But Mel would always come in and say, "Give me a Greek salad and throw some chicken on there." So that's what the Mel Fisher salad is. And you mentioned Bob Evans. Bob Evans would eat at Montgomery Inn.
really?
Up until the last 4 or 5 years that he passed away. We would see him 4 or 5 times a year. And I'll tell you what, I mean, when you're in a restaurant business and Bob Evans comes in, that is a feather in your cap, I'll tell you what. And Buddy LaRosa, who I think is the greatest man in Cincinnati, his entire family, what they've done for our city. But Miss Buddy and Mrs. LaRosa used to come in and eat every Wednesday about 4 o'clock at the Bonehouse. And I remember telling Buddy one day, I said, if there's one person I would pay to come to our restaurant and eat just because I am so proud that they eat here, it would be you, you know, because I just think that man is remarkable. I'll tell you what, he's just been so good to our city.
He sure has. I want to run another story by you that I think is legend, and I want you to fact check it for me, if you would.
Sure.
So the story I heard when it comes to the Boathouse is you guys had the Montgomery Inn location. I think you had some other business ventures going on at the time. And your dad called a family meeting.
Correct.
And yep. said, I'm thinking of something. I'm thinking that we need to be downtown. There's a piece of riverfront property that we can build on Eastern Avenue. I think it would be great. Are you guys in or out? And without exception, the family was out. Like, no way. No way. That's too adventuresome. We're going to lose money. No one wants to come downtown to eat. And this was a time before the renaissance of downtown or everything.
There was an auto junkyard across the street. There were two condemned buildings. And it was just, I mean, and the Boathouse sat on a deserted railroad yard.
And
it was
so,
terrible.
Yeah. And because of that, the family said no. And then you voted it down. And your dad said, well, too bad. I already signed the papers.
Signed the lease, true? For sure. That is absolutely true.
Oh, yep.
So much for democracy in our family.
Yeah, that one vote was the most powerful vote.
He was a king, I'll tell you what. Yeah. He was a visionary.
Any regrets?
No, none at all. I'll tell you what. And you know what? I'm just lucky that I got to be the one to go down to operate the Boathouse, whatever. We've been there 32 years, and it is a pleasure going to work every day, just looking at that river. And I don't know, it's just so peaceful down there. It's peaceful when we're not open. It gets pretty hectic when you're busy, but I think we've got the greatest guests in the world down there. I just absolutely love being there.
And you got the greatest employees, too. Some of them have been around for a long time.
We've been very fortunate. We've had a lot of people that have been with us forever, 30, 40, you know, years, whatever. And I depend on those guys so much, whatever. And
so do you walk around and hand out $100 bills?
I don't. You know what? No, I don't. I wish I could. I hand out some 20s once in a while.
Any pictures of yourself?
For sure.
Your go-to meal at Montgomery Inn?
Oh, gosh. When I tell you this, you won't believe it. I still eat ribs all the time. Our steaks are wonderful, but our pork chops are also fantastic, whatever. So I do ribs and chops. I go back in the kitchen. We cook our ribs all day long, and I always go back and, you know, just try a couple bones, make sure that everything's good, whatever. And I never get tired of trying them. We have our Chipotle sauce now that my brother Tom, that was his invention, and I purposely didn't like it because Tom thought of it, not me. So,
is there a brotherly rivalry?
Oh,
like, is he
going to
be mad that you're with
us
today and not him?
No, Tom.
Because if that's the case,
he's on vacation, but we ought to get him on here sometime.
We need to. But I also ran into him at Montgomery Inn and left a note saying, you know, call me. We'd love to get you on the podcast. Crickets. So if he complains to you, just remind him that he was invited.
Yep.
All right.
Well, my mother, when we opened the Boathouse, my mother said that we broke up the best comedy act in Cincinnati. Because Tom and I were both in our early 20s. We were both tending bar in Montgomery back then. And I would be at one end of the bar. We had 13 bar stools there. So I would be telling 6 or 7 people what a jerk Tom is all the time and pointing down to him. And Tom would be at the other end telling his customers what a jerk I was, whatever. And we just played off of each other all day long. We had more fun out there in the old days. We were like, on Sunday night, we would close. We would close at 9 o'clock on Sundays. By 10 o'clock, all of our buddies would start showing up. We'd have card games in there. I remember a couple times we moved all the tables out of the dining room, and we had boxing matches in there. We'd be in there drinking beer, boxing each other. It was like
– like Fight Club?
Oh, yeah. Like, wow. We were like the luckiest. We had, what a great clubhouse for kids to have, whatever. And we'd always clean up, and you know, and hell, we didn't get out of there until 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning probably. My father would be there at 6 every day. We would clean up. Everything would be spotless. And the next morning, we would get a call, which one of you idiots was here last night? And I would always blame Tom, and he would always blame me. And we never – I mean, the place was spotless. I never knew how he caught on. And when my father was dying, I said, Dad, let me ask you a question. I go, 40 years ago, I said, how'd you always know we were in there on Sunday, you know, drinking all night? He starts laughing. He goes, you dummies. He goes, everything was spotless, but he goes, you took all your drinks and you dumped them in the sink behind the bar. He goes, I'd come in the morning, there'd be ice in there. He goes, I knew you just, you know, the ice had already melted from the day before. Yeah. So he was a good investigator. Oh, yes,
too.
He was for sure.
Oh, yeah. Attention to detail. Yeah.
We had a picture in our office with him to Tom and Dean. I'm watching you two dummies. So he was always, his presence was always there, I'll tell you.
Well, Dean, I wish we could go on more. This has been great. I want to thank you. I want to congratulate you and your family for 70 years.
Thank you very much.
It's truly an honor for you to be here. You know, we had Buddy LaRosa on the podcast as well. And to hear these stories and, you know, let our listeners get to know you a little better, because you're like an icon, you and your family.
I don't know about that, but you are.
And you do so much, you know, good for the city, and thoroughly enjoyed having you on here.
And I appreciate it. And if
Tom wants to come anytime, right, Jason?
Absolutely.
Because we want to hear the other side of the story.
I would love to get Tom and I here together sometime. Oh. We could really come up with some stories, for sure.
Maybe that could be a new podcast.
Definitely.
The Tom
and Dean
Show.
Listen to you guys talk. I have one thing to say before we go. Don't ever let Bill Cunningham beat you in golf and start making him pay for his meals.
He is the absolute best. When we play golf, Billy, I'm a terrible golfer. Willie is a scratch golfer. He shoots his age still, you know, quite often. But he's always been my partner. But when he gets on here and talks about how bad my golf game is, you cannot believe how many people come in the restaurant that night to tell me, to have dinner and tell me what Willie said. And I go, Willie, keep it up, whatever. So
yeah, oh yeah. There's no such thing as bad publicity, right?
Definitely.
Keep it up on the great work.
I appreciate being here. Thank you so much. Well,
thank you.
I'll come back anytime. Next time I'll bring food with me, okay?
That's a deal.
We'll have lunch. Alrighty.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Dean.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Dean Gregory. And Burrow, I'll tell you, and we talked with Dean a little bit before we started recording, and then for what, 15 minutes thereafter. Dean is someone I could sit here for 3 or 4 hours, maybe even an entire day, smoke a cigar with him and talk. He's just such a great storyteller.
You know, he's got stories. If you want to know about, you know, what it was like in the 70s, early 80s, around the big red machine era, when some of these institutions that we take for granted were really just kind of starting to establish themselves, and the stories behind, how the boathouse came to be, Ted Gregory, the patriarch of the family, with the deciding vote. it doesn't get better than that.
Was that your favorite story?
You know, that is one of my favorite stories. You know, of course, the exploding cigars by the graveside, you know, with Ted Gregory having the last laugh. That's legendary now. But, that interview probably had at least 10 or 11 That's So Cincinnati moments in it. And I'm glad we were able to capture some of that. And Dean is always gracious with his time and always, you know, he's got the stories, and I could listen to them all day. What was your favorite one?
My favorite is mom's involvement in the whole process. Going back to, and maybe this is multiple stories, but I'll put it under the umbrella of mom's involvement from the standpoint of going back, you know, testing out all, cooking the ribs to then it's her sauce to her still, from her nursing home, calling and checking in every day, to make sure the sauce has not been burnt.
The sauce isn't burnt. Man, what a mom thing to do, especially a Greek mom thing to do, right? I mean, I've got a Greek mom and they do not forget. You know, my mom will bring up something I did when I was 16 years old, like it was yesterday. I'm like, Mom. But anyway,
I have a non-Greek mom and she's that way.
Maybe it's a universal mom thing, right? But anyway, that was fantastic. Yeah. Thanks for letting me crash the show today.
Thank you. Jason. Thanks for coming.
I'm always happy to do it.
And thank you for listening, and we will catch you next week.